Fan Morning Show, Sports on 590 The Fan. Download, like, subscribe to our podcast, especially if you like winning money. And give us 5 stars for doing that. Let's talk to our buddy, Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. How's it going? 50-50 with Austin Matthews.
Hey, do you guys still take turns picking the music, Ailish? Or is it like, that's like intense?
Only on Fridays.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Vic. So Vic does basically every other day, every single segment, except for my 6:30 segment. But yeah, Fridays is aux cord. Every other day, Vic just does whatever he wants. You like
just
that one?
Just pounding. 9 a.m., Vic, just bringing the heat. Sorry, you were saying something, Ailish?
No. I mean, that'll get the vibes going. I mean, Austin Matthews is obviously the main conversation we want to have. You know, 50-50. Is that a heart lock for you? Is there any way that there is an argument for any other player right now?
I don't know. The human beings are really bad at changing our minds. This is like a psychological thing. And right now, everyone has kind of made up their mind. So, you know, whether it should be a lock or not, you know, if there's 10 games left, that's, I don't know, Blake would probably know, what's that, 10% of the season left? There's some season left. There's a lot. So it certainly shouldn't be made up in anyone's head. But, I mean, the guy has been unbelievable. He is scoring at will. He is scoring at the time when voters are making up their mind on who to vote for. You know, meaningful goals and just such a stretch of hockey. I think he's going to win it. And I think as of right now, if he ended the season today, he should. I mean, he's got far better defensive metrics than Connor McDavid to go on top of scoring all those goals. No one watches Yossi because he's in Nashville. I'm sure he's doing great. Way to go. And Shesterkin had just enough of a slump that to open the door that, you know, it didn't have to be the whole apples to oranges goalie to centerman talk. So I think it's his.
So, Yossi, congrats. You might hit 100 points as a defenseman. That's awesome. Give him the defenseman award. Same with Shesterkin. You get the goalie award. Congrats, guys. Like, you're going to get some hardware. Like, what they did is not going to be unprecedented stuff. Austin Matthews just had 50-50. I do think that he's locked it up because, okay, there's 10% of the season left, sure, but there's not 10% of the meaningful season left, right? Like, we're now through the important stretch, and the Leafs just body bagged Tampa Bay, they body bagged Boston, and they beat the Florida Panthers, and all the while, Matthews just kept chugging away and scoring goals. 50-50, like, you do something that hasn't been done since Mario in the mid-90s when we were mere little children. Yeah, no, it's yours. This is the award. You've won the award. He's going to hit 60. He might hit 65. I just don't see how, yeah, it's not already his. Like, he's proven everything we need to be proven. And to add on top of that, I mentioned this earlier in the show, Bourne, like, the guy's a conditioning freak now. All of a sudden, he's playing 20 minutes a night every single night with the entire burden of doing this 200-foot game on him. And he's got the weight of the goals on his shoulders, where everyone acknowledges that it has a mental toll to it for most people as well. Don't really see it with him. And he's doing it. Like, I really do think that he's got this thing locked up. It would take some kind of a disastrous last 10 games for him where he goes, like, goalless and Yossi goes on another tear for me to move the opinion off this one.
Yeah, it's crazy watching him. I'm trying to make sense of, like, how much of the way he's playing lately is tied to this goal chase, this, like, hyper-focus on, like, shooting the puck in the net, because it's just every single time he's on the ice, the other team is, like, cowing in fear. Like, it really does remind me of the way that some of the greats beat, you know, when you go up against the greats, the opposition beats themselves a little bit. Like, I guess just watching Tiger Woods, remembering, you know, his prime, guys would go out there and they would just poop in their golf pants, and Tiger would go out there and play okay and win. And you see this with the best. He seems to have this mental edge now too, where it's just like, okay, we're gonna, like, set up shop in the D zone and cross our fingers and hope he hits the post. Like, it just, he's inevitable right now.
Yeah, he really is. And we always talk about the release and we talk about the angles, and I do want to touch on that for you, but I think that the numbers now are just so overwhelming, and there's a little bit of, I'm going to repurpose a bit of a take from earlier, is that he's doing it so effortlessly that I think that we as observers of this team on a day-to-day basis are kind of losing a little bit of focus on how special this is. Like a guy like John Cooper says, well, maybe he could score 70, and everyone was already kind of focused on the record.
He might this year.
Right, he might this year, but that's what I'm saying. Is like, and okay, so I read this quote, and it was like a real reminder of someone asked him about the franchise, or he was asked by Jonas Siegel, asked Tyler Bozak about the franchise record, and Bozak replied, God, 50 goals is so many. And that was the way he opened the quote. And I saw that and I just laughed because it's like guys in the NHL are looking at this going, what is happening? This freak is just putting up all of these goals where it doesn't seem like there's any type of flukishness to what Matthews is doing. It seems like he's going to be able to continue and roll this into the future. And I'm trying to preach this whole like, hey, let's appreciate the moment of what 50 and 50 means. But then a part of me goes like, why can't Matthews just keep rolling this? Why can't he keep doing this? Like, is there any part of this run to you that feels like, okay, this is the best we're going to see from him, or do you actually believe that there could be more?
I just don't see how there could be more, and I know that's like, you know, one of those things like doubting great athletes is a dumb thing to do, but like how can there be more than this? Like, he shoots it in. I tweeted when it happened, he just shoots it in all the time. Like all the time. You're watching the game and he shoots it in again.
He's just always shooting it in.
So it is truly, you know, you watch Chris Kreider. Chris Kreider's got 49 goals. I think he's got 33 deflections or something. Like, go ahead and go replicate that next year. You know, like, that's not really how it works. I put out an article, it's on sportsnet.ca, on the weekend, on Saturday, about Matthews scoring and the way he's scoring. And, you know, everything has kind of worked in his favor a little bit. And one of those things is that he's on a team that has absolutely awesome teammates, and that's part of it. Like, I went through all his goals from last year, and you know, some of the plays that guys make to get him the puck are like, yeah, he finishes, but like, he doesn't score like this on Arizona this year. And then on top of that, he's like adding new layers. You know, the one-timer this year, he's taken more one-timer attempts this season than any other year of his career. You know, he's got this kind of backdoor tip-in play. He's just like really finds all. He's the most. I think Kevin Bieksa called him the most versatile scorer. You know, whether Ovechkin ends up being the greatest goal scorer of all time or not. Sure. You know, Matthews feels like the most versatile. He's not just taking a one-timer from one spot. It's in any different way he can score.
Yeah, and that's what's so unbelievable about him when you roll the highlight tapes and you watch these things in there, because you see it night in, night out. But you watch them all together, and it's just, it's insane the different angles he gets, the releases he gets, the creativity, the ability to just like shift his balance. Like, there's just so many things about him where you go, oh my God, how are you ever going to stop him from scoring goals? Because he can just beat you in a variety of different ways. Plus, you do have to factor this in, and it is an important component of it, is like, he's a unbelievable goal scorer. I think the best goal scorer in the NHL now over Ovechkin. Like, to me, it's not even a question. But he also happens to play with this special playmaker who finds ways to get him the puck and can create zone entries like few other guys, who can take pucks from other players. So you add that thing on top of it, and it just seems like, boy, is it inevitable that he's just going to kind of keep rolling numbers like this.
Yeah. Hold on, one thing I want to add on Matthews, I don't know if you're going to move on. So I shared that I put that article up online, and of course it's like everyone not from Toronto's like, hey, Leafs net, like how many has he scored in playoffs, and like, you know, all those different things. You know, and I just want to say, in playoffs he has 13 goals in 32 games, which over an 82 game season would be like a 34 goal pace or 33-34 goal pace. And then you're talking about including like his rookie years and all that. You're talking about playing against one of the best 16 teams, or in the Leafs games, one of the best teams in the league in the first round most years, where your numbers are going to be different. His pace has not even dropped off in the postseason. He had a bad playoff series statistically against Montreal last year. Other than that, he's been fine in playoffs. So I'm looking forward to this year. And I just think it doesn't hold water when someone's like, what about playoffs? So he's been great.
No, he has been. And again, this was part of the reason why. I know that some of this is like for radio, because you have to have like a take. And how the hell do you have a take on a guy who scored 50 and 50? Like, especially when he's doing it every day.
You're it's
like,
good.
Okay, yeah, he's amazing. He's really good. He's really good. But my real thought, and I believe this genuinely, is that it's a little underappreciated, mostly because when you see something this great over and over, you can be desensitized to it, right? Like, it doesn't matter. You can get a little desensitized, and I think people are, especially since there have been rolling seeing markers of Vive's record and 50 goals and seeing 60, right? Like, there's always, like, something else for him. Then there's Ovechkin 65 and getting 66 and John Cooper talking about 70, where we're like, what's meaningful? And that's why I love the Bozak quote where he goes, God, 50 is so many. And you're like, right, 50 is insane. A 50-goal score is nuts. And we're just doing that with, like, yeah, put him down in a pen. Like, saying he's going to get less than 50 goals in a season is a hot take now. But the other part of it is that Leaf fans watching this have the anxiety of the playoffs hanging over them and have that fear that he's not going to replicate it in the playoffs, or that the group is not going to get over the hump in the playoffs, or that you lose the specialness of this player by not being able to convert it. And so people don't want to celebrate this the same way that I think other fan bases would.
Yeah, I guess there is sort of like a little bit of hesitation. You know, by the same token, like the run the Leafs are on as a team is unbelievable. This team has 100 points right now with 10 games to go. The franchise record in points is, I think, 105. Like, they're going to smash that. So, like, it of course, what happened in against Montreal and in the years before clouds everything, and we all said that nothing is going to matter in the regular season. What could they do to make you care about the regular season? And the answer almost universally was nothing. You know, there's nothing they could do. But I think there's a case to be made once you're going to set the historic franchise mark for best season and one of your players is going to win the Rocket Richard and the Hart Trophy and set records. Like, at some point, can you just appreciate the hockey? Like, we're watching unbelievable hockey, and I give them as good a chance as anyone in any series that they got in the first round. You know, whether it's Florida, Tampa, Boston, whoever, they're going to have a shot here. So, I don't know. Maybe I've been in Toronto too long, but this is a pretty fun hockey team to watch, and they're pretty damn good.
Yeah, it really has been spectacular. And, yeah, my God, I can't believe he's got this goal chase. I'm going to be tracking that, though. It's like, I think that's a really big question that you just asked, is how does he play in terms of chasing the record? Does that take a toll? And my God, do I really, really hope we don't end up in a place, like you just scared me, where we go, and Blake, I know that you can already see me doing this, where I'm like, the chase for 65, gassed him out, and now...
Yeah, I know. Well, down the stretch, there's such a concern, right? It's like his minutes in the game where he was around 54 or 50, whatever the milestone was, it was like he played 23 and a half and 24 and a half minutes, and it was like, don't do that. Like, let's not play Patrick Marleau in the last game of the year because he has a, you know, consecutive game streak. Maybe rest the old guy. You
we'll
know, like,
all talk about that game streak till the end of time. What an accomplishment by Marleau. Like, yes, it was so meaningful.
I can spin it still. You're just getting him ready for playoff minutes, and then you can ease off after. But no, this is why winning games
right now
is important. Yeah, this is why winning games right now is important, right? Like, I don't think they're going to rest Matthews when he's going for a bunch of goal records, but certainly a couple games where he's down in the 17, 18, 19-minute range are possible, especially against some of the lighter opponents. I don't want to take this Auston Matthews celebration and turn it negative, but I'm going to. I have another Leafs question that is a little less rosy, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Liljegren hasn't played since the 5th. He's been the 7th man in the press box a couple times recently. Are you seeing enough from the other 6 guys, or do you want him worked back into the mix here? Because I go back and forth on, ooh, Keith doesn't like Liljegren as much as I do, and maybe this is how it looks in the playoffs, to, oh, maybe he's just trying other things because Liljegren has, you know, he's set in a third pair kind
it's
of thing.
Not
where
that.
Are you at on the defense usage? It's not that? Yeah, I didn't think so.
It's not that he's set in a spot, and they're like, he's so certain, no. We don't even need to see him.
He's so certain as the third pair.
That's the least thing it is.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I get your point. Like, he was playing so well and was on a really good run. I think it's rare, and you lie about this all the time as a coach, but it's rare where you have 7 guys that you like and want to play. Like, I don't think that they're, like, down on Liljegren, but I actually think that the way Florida and that blown lead shook out hurt Liljegren, and none of it was Liljegren's fault. I don't think he was on the ice for a goal against, I don't think. But I think the way that game played out made them miss Lyubushkin. I just feel like they weren't able to clear out the front of the net at times. They gave up chances in front, and I think they looked at their potential D-men. They said, man, it would have been nice if we were just a little bit stronger, a little bit heavier in that spot. And, you know, Bush comes back in. I think he had led the team in hits last game with 10 hits for a Toronto Maple Leafs defenseman. It's just like, It's a rare thing here. It's been uncommon over the past long time to see a guy like that in blue and white, and I think they really like having him in. So I don't think it's about Liljegren as much as it's about Lyubushkin.
I also think that if it's hard for me for like the cognitive dissonance, I think, among people where they go, like, I've liked Liljegren lately too, and I actually was a proponent of let me see that even a little stretched out. But then you think about them going into the playoffs, and if we believe in all the demon talk that's been going around lately, right, where I go, okay, yeah. I'm almost even, like I joked on Friday, that if that's all you have to point to with this Leafs team right now, it's a pretty good indicator of where good they're team. At as a team. Like, good to know. But if you believe in trying to change up things from the past, I would say that one of the things that you would want to change is having a team that's pretty tough on the back end, that has a bunch of guys that it's like if you try to stand in front or if you try to create plays off the cycle, that they're going to punish you for those things, right? Like, Lyubushkin's not going to be comfortable to be around. He's going to make you pay attention. Same with Giordano, same with a much lesser degree with Hall, but same with Muzzin. Like, it's nice that all of a sudden Toronto doesn't just have, like, the one guy that's physical. All of a sudden the fact that they would have multiple, I think that puts something into your opponent's head, but I also think that that does something for your team as well. Like, that goes beyond what you see just on the ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you have like Muzzin, Giordano, Lyubushkin, like you start to have enough guys that play with that little bit of snarl without being meatheads. Yep. I mean, I think that's a nice way to be built. You know, the Lyubushkin thing is like it's always managing expectations, and this is the same whether it's Liljegren or Lyubushkin. One of these guys is going to be in, and at some point they're going to have an off night where, like, Lyubushkin sometimes just gets stopped. Like, I don't know he doesn't keep his momentum going, and someone will beat him off the wall or something like that. Like, it happens, and it's going to happen, but your sixth guy is never going to be the perfect player. So I think it's giving these guys a little bit of runway, and then, you know, those guys knowing that the second something goes wrong, there's someone who can come in, I think is a good thing too. I think the best thing that could happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs is they go into game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs and Timothy Liljegren's a scratch, because that means they're healthy. That means everyone's available to them. Lyubushkin can go ahead and do his physical thing, and he's right there. You know, Liljegren's right there waiting in the wings if they need him. I agree, JD, that, like, just the structure for postseason, I would be worried about Liljegren getting cooked a little bit more often than Lyubushkin would.
Okay, so Saturday night during 32 Thoughts on the panel, Merrick and Elliott were mentioning the Matthew Nyes decision that's pending. You know, he's going to have a sit-down with the Leafs early this week to determine what his next steps are. Obviously, Michigan didn't win in the Frozen Four, a little bit of a disappointment. They mentioned there's a great core returning next year at school, and he has to decide between going back for another year to chase that elusive championship or signing with the Leafs. What do you do in this situation?
Well, it's not even a question for me. I'm going to play in the NHL on a team that has a chance to win a Stanley Cup. Like, it's, and I'm getting paid. That's a no-brainer for me. I understand that it's not such an easy decision for everyone. It would be different for me, I think, if he was like at Harvard or like, it was like somebody had like some, you know, passion. He was going to pursue a business degree or had some other career in mind. Like, I think this guy's going to be a hockey player. He went to Michigan to play hockey. He looks ready by all accounts to play in the NHL. I think it'd be good for him to get his feet wet, get a taste of it before heading into his first summer of training and get to know people. I really think it would give him a launching pad into having a great year next year. You know, I get the vibe, and, you know, I've asked a lot of people about this, that there is concern about that it is Toronto, and it is a circus, and there's a lot of attention on them, and they saw, you know, Nick Robertson kind of come up, and they set fire to Nick Robertson, or we did, or whatever. But listen, Robertson wasn't good enough to play in the NHL. That was what happened, you know? It's I do think that there is some hesitation because of the market, and right or wrong, I hope that's not the case. I don't know. You go back to Michigan.
That's so lame.
Well, you know what's lame? Going back and trying to win a national championship. Then someone gets hurt and you're like, what did I do this for? I could be playing the NHL and like now we don't have our best players. Anyway. Well, okay, go ahead.
Do you think it matters where – oh, I was going to say, do you think it matters where they're going to be like slotting him in? Does he have that conversation like, am I fourth line? Am I getting any other opportunities? Yeah. Like, where do you see me? Or do you think it's really just the opportunity to play versus going back to school?
I think it's the opportunity to play. Like, I can't imagine – him saying to the Leafs, like, I'm only coming if you put me on the second line or something.
He's
like,
19 years old. If he says that, he can stay in college for the rest of his life.
I know. I know.
Like, I hope he doesn't.
Van Wilder it. You imagine saying that? Oh, my God. Where will I be?
I know. Yeah. But, I mean, I am picturing the conversation with Dubas and his representation, and they're saying, you know, Toronto is trying to convince him to come out. He'd be an unbelievable addition for them, given what they're lacking. God, if you watch some of this video of him, like, crushing college kids, I know it's different at the NHL, but they could really use him. So I can see Dubas being like, come on, and we'll put you in a position to succeed and saying what you got to say to get him. I guess once he's there, you don't have to do it, but that's hardly a way to do business. So I don't know. My gut feeling from what I hear is that he's not going to come to the Leafs. But we'll see.
That's a bummer. I really hope we get to see him. I really hope we get to see him. You know, we've been hearing about him for quite a while. Everyone, you know, making sure that he wasn't part of any trade packages. We're excited. We want to see him. Maybe stay tuned. We'll see. You're not too confident about it, but things can change. Things can change. Thanks for joining us this morning, Bourne.
Yes, here's to hope. Thanks, guys.
Justin Bourne, co-host of Rio Kipper and Bourne.
So I'll admit that I'm torn on this because he's only 19 years old. You get to be a college student once in your life. You probably have had this goal of winning this championship. You got so close. And there's an element of like, okay, if he doesn't want to be a pro and he's not ready, then that's not the worst thing. Like, it's not. So that's fine, right? It's not my life to live. It's his. But I also do feel a level of disappointment selfishly of I want to see him as a Leaf. He appears to be physically ready for the game, and he appears to be someone that could actually help a championship winner in the NHL. And I look at that decision and go, you really wouldn't want to do that? Making money, starting the clock earlier on your entry-level deal, wanting to contribute to a group that's here. I don't like hearing – I'll tell you one thing. I hate hearing the thing about the market. Like, that is a – like, I really hope that's wrong because that's just terrifying to me of people putting that in his head or that he would care or that would be a deterrent.
I don't know. It's a pretty tough place to step in your first NHL games and, you know, you're in pretty much the biggest eyes on you playoff push. There is something to be said for that. I don't feel like that's going to be the determining yes or no. Yeah. But maybe you ease into it.
What, because he's 21 instead of 20? I don't know. I just think that's pretty – that's loser talk. Like, that's loser talk is to be like, I'm afraid of the market and what people are going to say to me. Like, they'll just spit me up and chew me out. I want more time in college. Like, I don't like that at all. Like, that's just my quarterback thing is throw the quarterback in the fire right away. Who cares? Let's see if they're tough and they're resilient and they can bounce back. Like, if you're not going to make it at the beginning, I don't think that you're going to make it later. But what would you do, Ailish? Because, like, yeah, you did live a U.S. college experience, and you know how special it can be playing on competitive teams and how hard it can be to leave. But what do you think, like, you're weighing in a situation like this?
I mean, there's really something special about playing in the NCAA for a national championship. And him being 19 years old, like, you know, as you said, you only really get to do that once or twice. His team seems extremely competitive. A lot of them are coming back next year. He has a chance to be a star once again there. But also, I know that a lot of people laugh about the education, but maybe there is something about valuing that. Obviously, I did, but it's a different situation. You know, as a female hockey player, you don't have that, you know, goal to go jump into a pro league. But either way, I see the value in both. I think another year in college isn't going to make him a lesser player. It's going to continue to grow his game. Maybe he gets more ice time. Obviously, he gets more opportunity to work on his skills. But Bourne raised a good point. You're going to get into the training program here. You're going to meet the guys. You're going to make money. So I can't see it being a bad decision either way. He's in a really fortunate spot. You know, a lot of eyes excited about this decision, but I wouldn't feel negatively depending on either of his choices. In my situation, I'd probably actually stay and play another year of college. Like, it's so special. You know, you're going to play for the Leafs next year or the year after anyway, but college is something very, very exciting and different. I don't know. Maybe I'll get blown up for that take, but I honestly, like, I think NCAA hockey is something really special. So
Austin he gets a great decision to have. Deal, Eilish. He has 2 years left on his deal. Like, not that Matthew Nyes owes him anything, but you're both the kids from Arizona. You're both U.S. hockey players. Like, the idea of trying to slot a college championship as big as a cup, like, I just can't imagine Leafs actually winning.
I didn't say it's as big as a cup.
No, no.
I just think it's something special that he
sure.
If he wants to go and chase that, good for him.
He had... Yeah. I don't know. I think if you win the Stanley Cup next year, if the Toronto Maple Leafs and he wins a Frozen Four even the same year, like, yeah, I think Gordon's right.
Next year.
Yep.
Are you next year if he joins the Leafs and plays a full season? Certainly. But this is talking about him joining the Leafs this week.
No, no, no. This is about him doing it for next year. Like, he's going back to college for another season. Like, as in he wouldn't be with the Toronto Maple Leafs next year. Like, I think that's a pretty weighty decision. Like, that's a pretty heavy one. And like I said, he's a kid, and if he's not ready, he's not ready, and I'd rather he not come if he's not ready, honestly. And I don't mean that as like a selfish Leaf fan. I mean it's for him as a person. Like, go ahead. Take your time. But
yeah, but if he's not ready and he comes into this experience, it could actually be, you know, a lot worse for him.
Of course.
Yeah.
But he looks pretty damn ready. Like, he's going to be a 20-year-old, you know, big-bodied kid. He's going to be turning, I think, what, 20 this year? Or is he... Yeah,
this 20 year, in October. 20.
So he's young. He's got time. There's no need for him to rush. If it's what's best for him, yes. I don't know if the education thing is as much. Like, last I saw, he doesn't even have a major. Like, he's... I don't think he's there for school. No offense, but yeah, no declared major is usually an indicator of you're there to play hockey. And if you're going back for this decision, it would seem to be it's about the hockey team, not the education. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would just caution him and say, like, dude, that's a lot of money that you're turning down. It's a year away from the money. And Eilish, you might say, like, oh, well, he could be on the Maple Leafs, but it could change a lot of where his career earnings end up, whether he wins a Stanley Cup, whether he gets to play an extended period with Austin Matthews or not. Like, there are some ripples from that decision. So, yeah, it's an interesting one, though. It really is. Like there were people – I saw some people Blake had saying Chet should go back to school for a year to build up a little bit of strength before he goes to the NBA. It's weirder when it's a prospect in a sport that is physical, but is like, he looks like he could already match the physicality. Like, you don't normally see it like this with prospects.
Well, it's also, you know, I do come at this from a basketball background, so it's a little different for me to contextualize, because in basketball, so often the decision is also about what does it do for your draft stock, whereas Nyes has already been drafted. Now, the Chet thing, what I would say is, well, where you're going to be better able to add strength and all that stuff is with an NBA conditioning program and the resources of an NBA staff. Here's
Don't
what we
Joel
can do for
Embiid
Matt.
Dunks on you and you're like, I thought I was stronger.
It's like, yeah. No, he gets drafted by the Thunder and he gets to post up Pokuševski in practice.
No, you're right. Chet got to go, though. He's already drafted. You need to get the money.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why it's different in the NBA, side with guaranteed contracts and things like that. You know, there are family considerations and life considerations, things like that. So here's what we do for Matthew Nyes, Eilish. We make him the winner of a ticket giveaway for April 19th so that he can come and experience what this is like in person. Tell Matthew Nyes how he can do that.
Hey, Matthew Nyes, you want to come see maybe your future Toronto Maple Leafs play? And if maybe you're not on the bench, you could be in the stands. April 19th, giving away a pair of tickets to the Maple Leafs home game against the Philadelphia Flyers. All you have to do is download today and Tuesday's episodes of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the different code words that are placed in each podcast. Then text each code word to 590-590 for your chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected this Wednesday, so listen for the code word. You can head to the April 19th home game against the Philadelphia Flyers. The code word is not Matthew Nyes, but it is something else, so go find it, and we wish you the best of luck.
Thanks for clarifying that it is something, even though it's not.
It is something. You have to go figure out what it is.
All right. Blue Jays excitement this weekend. I don't know if anyone was more excited than Tim McAuliffe hosting Tim and Friends from on the field before the game. Let's take a break. Let's talk to Tim about all that Jays excitement and everything else that went on this weekend. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
The code word for today's episode to text to 590-590 to qualify for your shot to win Leafs Flyers tickets on April 19th is brown.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. The Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy. Ailish Porfar. JD Bunkus. Give them a follow at their names on socials. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. The Fan Morning Show. Rate, review, all that good stuff. So, very exciting opening weekend for the Toronto Blue Jays. Not to plug my own stuff, but I've been doing some Blue Jays pregame stuff on the radio, on the Sportsnet Radio Network. And I get to the game Friday with my little press pass, and I go in early and I look down, and there's old Tim McAuliffe doing Tim and Friends from on the field. We're joined by Tim now to answer the question, Tim, how come I'm your friend when you're in studio or you need someone on Zoom, but when you're on the field with the coolest night of Tim and Friends ever, suddenly I'm not a friend anymore?
I think Jesse Rubinoff is asking the same question this Monday because he was left in the studio. I'm going to use the excuse that we had to use with Jesse, which was COVID protocols. Mm-hmm. We could not have too many people on the desk along with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and George Springer.
Well, I too many is one thing, but I'm not asking for the whole morning show to get to come on, Tim and Friends. Just me. I don't need Jesse there, too. Just me.
You just outlined a Curb episode of, like, a guy giving Vladimir Guerrero Jr. COVID right before the start of the most exciting season so that they could add the extra person. Like, that's Curb.
Yeah, without a doubt. I felt that, too. I'm going to be honest with you, because Hector LeBron was there, and Hector LeBron, one of the most famous translators in all of, like, I introduced Hector LeBron on our show, and I was thinking in my head, like, very Curb-like as well. Like, this dude's famous. Like, Hector's just as famous as any of the Jays, half the Jays.
Yeah.
So how was that experience, just doing the show from down there and feeling the excitement kind of not only firsthand, but, like, hands on the field, talking to the players? We all got a good feel of it from in the 100 section, but that's not quite on the field, Tim.
Yeah, you know, the it's funny. You hear, like, media people talk about, oh, the buzz in the building is palpable, or you can feel it. And it's, you know, sometimes I think, like, people are just full of horse bleep and they're saying that because that's what they're supposed to say on opening day. Mm-hmm. But I talked to a lot of the players and you can just see it on their face. Like, this was a different opening day for everybody. Like, George Springer has been around for a while. Like, he's 32. Come after him. He's a man. And he was excited about opening day and it was genuine. He's like, I can't wait to see this building full like it was back in the day, you know, 2015. Because I remember coming in here as an opponent, and this was before we even went on air. Like, we were just shooting the breeze. And he's like, I can't wait to feel this. And it did not disappoint. Like, they definitely lived up to the 40,000 or 45,000 that were in there. There was a different feel, and I think a lot of that has to do with the way the last 2 years went for this team. And more specifically, like, a lot of guys were talking about how close they were last year and wondering, you know, if they played the full 81 allotment in that building, would it have been different when it came down to that one game and that Rafael Devers home run in Washington? So, like, we wax poetic about a lot of these things. We'll play the Stephen Brunt essay, and sometimes I wonder how genuine it was or it is. It was definitely genuine on Friday, and you could definitely feel it down on the field.
Yeah, and I wonder if mixed in with that excitement amongst the players is that, you know, they get to look across the diamond right away in the other dugout, and there's Marcus Semien in a different uniform, and it's a reminder of, like, that this doesn't last forever, right? And that, hey, you're young, but there is an urgency to this when you're this good and you've got this lineup. And, like, Teoscar has that weekend, and you go, boy, he's only got 1 year left on his arbitration before he needs to get paid. And you look at the way things are going, and who's going to get paid? Probably not that guy. So you get 2 years with that. Like, it's very, very fun right now. But I couldn't get the sense of, like, and I felt the same way as you did, right? Like, I've gone down to every opening day since 2013 that they've allowed me to go to that wasn't, you know, in Buffalo. But this one did feel different. And so much of it is that not only is there the excitement of winning, but there's this connection to the team, right? Like, even when you're interviewing these players, I'm going to guess, Tim, that you looked forward to speaking to these guys a little bit more than, say, the 2015 team, you know? Like, you know, they might have been a little bit more amenable. Yeah, to meeting them. And I just wonder what you make of the notion of, like, where this team ranks for you or how this team feels for you, just in terms of just the unanimous popularity of them and the way that they just seem to resonate with this country right now.
Yeah, and I think you add in with themselves, too. Like, I think it was Caitlin McGrath in The Athletic, and I'm stealing it, so I'm going to give credit to it. But nice. I'm pretty sure Caitlin wrote a story about the guys who joined this team and how they saw them from afar. And she spoke to Mac Chapman, and she spoke to Yusei Kikuchi and his translator, and they were talking about how much fun it looked like the Jays were having in the dugout. And then once they got into that dugout, they realized it was genuine. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a part of this that I think fans in 2022 see through a lot more than you would have in, say, 1992, because you get so much great access. And I think that they see that this joy with this team is genuine and it's not phony. And that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. really enjoys playing baseball. And that Bo Bichette is really serious about baseball. But, man, does he love doing well and winning games. And I think that's why the team is likable. Because I think they're likable dudes first, and I think it's genuine. And I have this quote that I always use on our show, and I think it really speaks to kind of people's love for sports and certain teams. And the quote is, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And this team, like, it just seems like they have an unfettered joy playing the game. And even when it was crappy for them, or it was tougher for them a couple of years ago, or they were playing in Dunedin in a minor league stadium, or they moved to Buffalo, they were still having fun. And it's not just the winning, but you add winning on top of it, and it's an easy team to cheer for, without a doubt.
And so you mentioned Vladdy being kind of like the vibes coordinator, like I am on this show. How important and how much is he the face of that team and their energy? And just, I mean, watching as a fan, he's got that infectious smile, he's dancing around. But what do you think he means in terms of the energy and the vibe of this team, especially moving forward?
Well, Santiago Espinal in spring training called him the mayor of the barrio. And the barrio was the end of the dugout where they all seemed to sit with the home run jacket waiting for someone to hit the home run. And then they can pop out and go to the front of that dugout where the managers are usually at. And I asked him, I said, do you consider yourself the mayor of the barrio? And he said, no, like I'm not that, I might be the deputy is where we ended up landing, but he definitely has, you know, when your best players exude something, I feel like the rest, like if it's Tim Duncan, you end up getting like a workman-like team. You know, if it's Steve Yzerman, you end up getting kind of, you take on the personality of your best players. And when your best players are your hardest workers and they're having fun, I think it sets a great tone. And I think the Jays like that. Like, I think that as a franchise, they like that Vladdy is, you know, he was the good vibes coordinator. He was the matter of the barrio, but they also needed him to work hard. And now that he's working hard, and you got Bo Bichette, whose work ethic is already legendary, I think it's a great tone to set. And I think you got that healthy balance there, Eilish. And that's kind of what I see with, like, obviously Vladdy is good times, good vibes. But you add that work ethic on there, and I think that's where the Jays have kind of like a special mix that I'm sure they hope bleeds down to their pitching staff eventually.
Yeah, especially when you look at the fact that Vladdy has worked so hard on his body the last two off seasons, like he's changed, and he's having success. Like, it's one thing, we all know this, this works in any workspace. It's fun to have someone fun around, but then when it's their turn to carry their weight and they're not doing it, you're like, okay, it's less fun. This isn't cute as much anymore. Now there's real work to be done, and he's actually doing it, and so it works. Like, it really does bleed down. I completely agree with you. And it's like, the team, it fits. It's Vladdy's team, but but it's Vladdy's team not just because he's the vibes coordinator, it's because he's the vibes coordinator and the best player on the team. Those two things go hand in hand. So is that, was that your prevailing sentiment for the weekend? Like, I know that's kind of a, like a vague question to ask you, but yeah, when you left and you watched these three games, was there something that just kind of sat with you and you kind of kept thinking of?
Yeah, and I the other thing that I thought of was like, okay, so the pitching struggled, and I don't know what to make of that yet. Obviously, when you talk to experts and they say this could be the best starting rotation in Major League Baseball, you're not going to panic after three games. It didn't look good after three games, but like Danny Jansen and Santiago Espinal hitting made me really wonder, like, there's no rest in this lineup. Absolutely. Like, Danny Jansen's hit at every level except for the pros. So there's like, there's an ability there that, you know, he might be able to see some pitches, and he may. Alejandro Kirk, we've seen hit the ball really hard. Santiago Espinal hit, what, like 311 last year? And I know that's a gentrified, no, what's the word I'm looking for? An old metric by saying he had a batting average of 311 last year. But if he can hit, right, like they're going to see pitches. And like immediately my mind went to, should I be like sprinkling Bo MVP, maybe even Teoscar MVP, because all of these guys are going to see pitches. And it was the same method I took to this team last year. Like, you thought they were going to score a lot of runs. I look at this team and I think, man, they're going to have a lot of fun bashing. Because eventually pitchers just make mistakes, and these guys can make you pay. And even down in the bottom of the lineup, guys, if they make them pay, this is going to be a long year for every team that plays them.
Okay, we got to ask you about the Masters. The other exciting thing that happened this weekend, it was a great weekend to just sit on the couch or to be at the ballpark. You know, Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, yeah, I put on pounds.
Yeah. Same. I'm just laying there like a slug with one arm in the chip
bag.
Well,
I can't cook. You got to order food because I'm watching.
You
so
can't
much.
Miss
I'm working
anything.
Here.
Nah,
working.
You can't
right.
move.
Oh, no. So Scottie Scheffler, just, you know, there's like hardly any words for his last 57 days, four wins in his last six tournament starts. It's just, it's insane. You know, he's 25 years old. He's just skyrocketed here. You know, we talked earlier about his rise and if it's one of a Tiger-esque type of entry into the golf world. But what's your take on just him being the top of the game for so short of a time and kind of being that unsung guy that just now is the number one in the world?
Yeah, we've seen a couple of like rises like this over the last little while in golf, and I feel like the field is better than it ever was. So for guys to be doing this, I mean, like, listen, Jordan Spieth has dropped off, but for a while there, you were thinking, oh, is Spieth the next guy? You know, is Rory McIlroy the next Tiger Woods? But it was fitting for Scheffler to win it because this is a Tiger-like run. Like, this is ridiculous. What he's been able to do over the last little while, so much so that, you know, Dan Wetzel had the story in Yahoo about how he didn't believe that he was ready for it even before the final round, where he's sitting in his hotel room wondering, you know, what the hell am I doing here? Am I ready for this? And had to get talked down by his wife. Like, this is a meteoric rise, and I found it fitting that it was the Tiger return, because this is a tie. Like, I don't know, 4 of 6. Like, you got to go back to Tiger to see runs like this. So it was really interesting to see him do what he did, and I found it really cool that he admitted to his confidence. Like, that's one of the things I think is so 2022. It's very cool. Like, I go on my show all the time and I talk about people's confidence. Like, Connor McDavid came on my show and talked about his confidence during the Oilers' struggles in the middle of the year that got Dave Tippett fired. And I think that people have this idea of athletes from, you know, 1984, where they're all super confident, cocky dudes who walk around and dominate everywhere they go, and don't realize how much of a struggle it is. And it was very cool to hear Scheffler, on the greatest heater that we've seen since Tiger Woods, say, yeah, I didn't know if I belonged here. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very cool.
Yeah,
he said he was sobbing.
Yeah.
Intense.
Cry, baby.
Yes. It's like, that's great. Yeah. No, I loved it. I totally agree with the Tiger stuff, where it just was to come out and have that kind of a statement, especially when I think we all looked at him with a raised eyebrow of who's number one? Scottie Scheffler? Wasn't are we? Yeah. What? Okay. And then he showed up and it was just like wire to wire like that, where there was really only two holes at the very beginning on Sunday where it looked a little bit like he could lose that lead. And then from that point on, you just went, okay, whatever. But now we get to see if he can roll this, you know, this success into multiple majors. Like if he can do the Brooks Koepka thing where he becomes the majors guy. And whether or not that resonates with people and we go, oh, now we care about Scottie Scheffler. Because as we talked to Jason Sobel about earlier, like the most interesting thing he's into off of the golf course is board games. So he's got to be dominant at golf. He's got to be dominant at golf for people to care about him. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we need to stop this. Like, who's the next Tiger Woods?
No,
like,
it's
this dude. This dude wore golf clothes to grade three. Like,
The who's Tiger Woods thing is actually, it's kind of cringeworthy whenever anybody does it now. It's like, no, don't do that. Like, you're ruining the fun that we're having from what we were doing right now. Okay, so we're making you do basically a bunch of stuff. You're like, we're doing a dry run for your show right now, right?
I appreciate it.
You
want to
work this take? Yeah. It's like, no stepping on. It's just like, hey, we can get some of these takes in here, get them out of the way. I'm trying to make the case that, in a weird way, Matthews' 50 and 50 is a little bit underappreciated because the fans are so dialed into what happens in the playoffs, and Leaf fans almost don't want to get made fun of for celebrating regular season successes. Do you get that sense at all? Like, again, you're a Toronto born and bred, raised guy. Like, the way that this has been operating, it almost feels like, one, he does it with such ease that we're like, yeah, ho-hum, he's just 50 and 50, whatever. Two is that we're watching all these different chases of, like, 50, Vive, then 60, then Ovechkin, 65, and then Cooper put 70 in people's heads. Do you feel like this accomplishment has been actually properly appreciated by the market?
You know, it's funny. I've always felt like, I don't know, since maybe the 18-wheeler rolled off the cliff with Ron Wilson back in the day, that Leaf fans have actually been pretty good, like self-aware, like understanding that everyone else is making fun of them and kind of doing it themselves too. And I, to be honest with you, like, I think it's an interesting take, JD, but I also think, like, there's a segment of fans that will always be just, you know, like, you know, unicorns and everything's roses and happy. But I think this Leafs fan base has been pretty self-aware about what's been going on for the last little while. And I hope that they're able to separate what Matthews has been able to do, because I think he's going to win the Hart Trophy. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it, oftentimes these things are narrative driven. And, you know, the Oilers have already got their hearts, and those are the guys that would probably challenge Austin Matthews. And I think the rest of the world looks at 51 and 50 and goes, holy bleep. And I think that there's a lot of Leaf fans that understand the difference. And it's like when you're watching the Raptors, don't try and project what they're going to do in the postseason. Just enjoy what they're doing right now. And I think Leaf fans have been beat down so much that they understand the difference, that they understand that the regular season is for enjoyment as well, even though you know it means jack. And that's a luxury, right? Like, the Leaf fans that I grew up with in the 80s, like, nothing was guaranteed. You were celebrating, like, Mikolaj Borisevsky scoring in the first round was, like, a monumental moment for a generation of Leaf fans. Like, a first-round victory for one of the franchises in all of sports was celebrated roundly. People who made conference finals were celebrated roundly, like Matt Sundin, maybe the greatest Leaf of all time to many people, and he made a conference final. Like, in other marquee markets, that would be chuckled at. So I think Leaf fans, you know, for decades have kind of been beat down. And if you haven't figured it out by now to separate the two things, I don't know if you ever will. So I hope it's being appreciated, because what he's doing right now is ridiculous. It's jaw-dropping. It is, you know, Vladdy-like. It is just because there's no postseason success doesn't mean that you can't celebrate it, and also doesn't mean that you can't hold him and or anyone else accountable if they don't do it in the playoffs again. Like, I think the two, you know, that mutual exclusivity, like, I think you can kind of be able to figure out what side of it you fall on, because it's pretty obvious.
Sure can, Tim. Tim McAuliffe, host of Tim and Friends, No longer my friend, but otherwise, great show. Oh, looking forward to tonight. I know.
Okay, we're friends still, Tim.
Labor Day. All right.
Thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Sorry to go long, guys. Take care, boys.
Tim McAuliffe, host of Tim and Friends. That's it for today's show. Don't forget, you got Jays Yankees tonight. Alec Manoah, Jameson Taillon, 7 p.m. Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We've been The Morning Show. Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's Text Line Tuesday, 590-590. Send us all your Leafs, Raptors, Jays thoughts, and have a great Monday.